President Favetti, it is 2 o'clock p.m. The recording is now on.
Thank you very much. I am using my gavel to call to order this regular meeting of the Civil Service Commission, Monday, September 15th, 2025. Our commissions, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Aldana, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, President Favetti.
Okay. So, well, I already used the gavel. We're going to call to order the regular meeting of the Civil Service Commission on Monday, September 15th, 2025. Our commission staff will read a statement with more information about our meeting today, and thereafter, staff will tell us how we are handling public comment.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Civil Service Commission meeting this Monday, September 15th, 2025. This meeting is being held in hybrid format, with the meeting occurring in person in City Hall, Room 400, and available to view on WebEx if you have an item scheduled on the agenda. The public may listen to the meeting by calling 415-655-0001 and using access code 2662-238-6382. We welcome the public's participation during public comment periods. There will be an opportunity for general public comment on items not on the agenda at the beginning of the meeting, and there will be an opportunity to comment on each discussion or action item on the agenda. Each comment is limited to 3 minutes. Public comment will be taken both in person and remotely by video or call-in. For each item, the agenda will take public comment first from people attending the meeting in person and then from people attending the meeting remotely. Commission staff will provide further instruction on how to provide public comment via phone or video. Please note that city policies, along with federal, state, and local law, prohibit discriminatory or harassing conduct against city employees and others during public meetings and will not be tolerated. Moreover, public comment is permitted only on matters within the jurisdiction of this meeting body. Commission staff will now provide further instructions on making public comment remotely.
As stated on our agenda and our website, this meeting is being held in person and remotely. For members of the public attending remotely who wish to make public comment, the phone number is area code 415-655-0001. The meeting access code is 2662-238-6382. Please make sure that you are in a quiet location and that you turn off any television or radio to reduce background noise so the commission can hear you. At the appropriate time, the president will ask the phone lines to be open for any public comments. If you wish to make comment on the particular item, you will be prompted to press star 3. This will add you to the speaker queue. The auto prompt will say the caller is entering question and answering time. You will be queued in the order in which you press star 3. There will be an automatic voice that will tell you when it's your time to speak. You will have 3 minutes. When your microphone has been unmuted, you will hear the meeting facilitator ask you to state and spell your name for the record and make your comments. Commission staff will begin your 3 minutes when you start speaking. When your time is up, you will be asked to finish your comment, and then meeting facilitator will place you back in the meeting.
Thank you. Executive Director Ng, could you go to the next item, please?
Item number 1, call to order and roll call. President Favetti.
Here.
Vice President Minor.
Here.
Commissioner Leung.
Here.
Commissioner Wood.
Here.
And we have a quorum.
Thank you. Should we go to the next item?
Item 2, request to speak on any matter within the jurisdiction of the Civil Service Commission but not appearing on today's agenda.
This is an opportunity to speak to the commission on any matter within its jurisdiction, but not appearing on today's agenda. Comments and general public comments should be directed to matters under the jurisdiction solely. If you have public comment and you are in the room, please come to the podium. And if you're on the phone, please press star 3 now. Ms. Aldana, is there anybody on the phone?
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Thank you so much. Okay, shall we go on to the next item?
Item number 3, approval of minutes, regular meeting of August 18, 2025. Recommendation, adopt the minutes.
Commissioners, do you have any additions, amendments, or a motion on the minutes for the special meeting of August 18th?
I move that we adopt the minutes of our meeting of August 18, 2025.
Second the motion.
Okay, is there any public comment? If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, shall we go on to the, excuse me, hold on, we'll do a vote. well, I'm just trying to streamline the meeting a bit, right. You know, I've got the agenda on my mind. Okay, so Vice President Minor.
Aye.
Commissioner Leung.
Aye.
Commissioner Atwood.
Aye.
And I vote aye. The vote is unanimous to approve the minutes from August 18, 2025. Shall we go to the next item?
Item number 4, announcements of changes to the agenda. Commissioners, we have a few changes. Item number 6, Civil Service Commission fiscal year 2024 through 25 year end report is postponed to the meeting of October 2025. Item number 7, from the ratification agenda, DPH, PSC, DHR, PSC 000-5562 is postponed to a future meeting. Item number 16, review of request for approval of proposed personal services contract, DHR PSC 000-5440 from the Department of Public Health is postponed at the request of the department to the meeting of October 6.
Okay, we are now at the portion of the announcements agenda where
President Favetti, can I get the numbers of the public health PSCs that are being postponed again, please?
It is DPH 5562, the last one, item number 7.
5562.
Uh-huh. 5562. And then item number 16, DPH 5540.
Oh, item number 16. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. And now we're on the item of our announcements agenda, where commissioners may wish to sever an item on the ratification agenda. Again, the ratification agenda is item number 7. I will pull each commissioner, and then we will ask for public if there is any item that public wishes to sever on item number 7, ratification agenda. Vice President Minor.
No items to pull.
Commissioner Leung.
I have several.
Okay.
First one is page 6, the ratification agenda. The first item is PSC 000-5223 airport. Yes, 5223 airport.
5234. I'm sorry. Yeah.
The first one.
Okay.
5223, 75 million. Second one, airport 5350, 60 million. Third one, 5417, airport 30 million. And then on page 12, 5547 PUC, $30 million.
So and just then, to, oh, go ahead.
And then there's one more that I just need clarification on. That would be back to page 7, 5596, public health for $8.96
million. Okay, so I want to double check that I got all of them. So you wish to pull item number, or on item number 7, ratification agenda, and I'm going to only use the last four digits. Airports Commission 5223. Airports Commission 5350. Airport Commission 5417. Public Health 5596. and PUC 5547.
Correct. Thank you.
Commissioner Wood?
None in addition to Commissioner Leung's.
Okay, and I have no further than what has already been announced.
Okay.
So I'm going to be asking the public if there are any items on, or any PSC items on item number 7, the ratification agenda, that are requested to be severed. If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, so now we'll go on to the consent agenda. I will poll the commissioners on whether or not there is an item on the consent agenda that I wish to poll, and that would be Vice President Minor.
No items to poll from consent.
Okay. Leung?
Nothing.
Commissioner Wood?
No, nothing to poll.
I don't have anything to poll, but I did want to comment. I wanted to shout out to MTA for their very good work on item number 8 in the provisional report, and working so hard with Local 200 on the 9136 recruitment, and for providing expansive on the report on the PBTs of the position-based testing, and for providing explanations where every question I had was answered as I went through. And thank you to DHR for your good work on the EEOCE report. Thank you so very much on that. So I just wanted to let you know about that, but I'm not going to pull anything from the consent agenda. Is there any member of the public that wishes to pull an item or consent agenda? If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, so to summarize again, there will be nothing polled from the consent agenda, and on the ratification agenda, the items being polled are PSC number 5223, Airport Commission, PSC 5350, Airport Commission, 5417, Airport Commission. Item 5562 from Public Health is being postponed. 5596, Public Health is being pulled and, or severed, I should say. And 5547 is severed. The remaining contracts are likely to be approved without a question at this point.
Okay,
so shall we go on to our next item, or if there's any other announcements that we need to be concerned about? Okay, so let's go on to our next item.
Item 5, Human Resources Director's Report.
Good afternoon, President Favetti, members of the Commission. Kate Howard, Deputy Director for the Human Resources Department. I know the Commission has a substantial agenda in front of it today, and I have no update for you at this time.
Very much. And shall we go on to the next item?
Item 6, Executive Officer's Report. Commissioners, our year-end report will be postponed to the meeting of October 20th, and no other announcements.
Shall we go on to our next item?
We are now on the ratification agenda. All matters on the ratification agenda are considered by the Civil Service Commission to be non-contested and will be acted upon by a single vote of the Commission. There will be no separate discussion on these items unless a request is made, in which event the matter shall be removed from the ratification agenda. Item 7, review of requests for approval of proposed personal services contract, and the recommendation of the Human Resources Director: adopt the report, approve the request for proposed personal services contracts, notify the Office of the Controller and the Office of Contract Administration.
Okay, do we have the motion on the remainder of the ratification agenda, not including contracts number 5223, Airport, 5350, Airport, 5417, Airport, 5562, Public Health, 5596, Public Health, and 5547, Public Utilities Commission.
I move that we adopt the report for the remaining PSCs and approve the request for the proposed personal services contract, notify the Office of the Controller and the Office of Contract Administration. So the motion is for all of the PSCs that were not polled for separate discussion.
Do we have a Second? Okay. Do we have any public comment on the motion? If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, I'll be doing the roll call vote. Vice President Minor?
Aye.
Commissioner Leung?
Aye.
Commissioner Wood?
Aye.
And I vote aye. The vote is unanimous on those contracts that were remaining, with the exception of, again, Airports Commission 5223, 5350, 5417, the Department of Public Health 5562, and 5596, and PUC 5547. Thank you very much. And shall we, is there an Airports Commission representative here, in person or online?
Is it on?
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Commissioner and President Favetti. My name is Victor Madrigal. I'm the PSC coordinator for design and construction at SFO.
Great. Thank you, Victor, for being here. For each of the three contracts that I pulled, I think I have the same questions and similar comments. For the first one that we're looking at, the $75 million, I think I understand the scope of work to be contracted out. But I also think that some of this work could be done by in-house staff. And part of the reason that I think it could be done by in-house staff is that a lot of this stuff that are contained in this PSC have been done by in-house staff, whether we're talking about the civil side or the electrical side of the division, whatever, I think that's what you guys call it. And also you cited in each of the three contracts, you cited insufficient staffing as a result of the contracting of the work out. So what I like to see, and that just one commissioner, I like to see to accompany or for me to decide on each of these three contracts, I like to see a staffing plan from the airport as to how you're going to bring some of this work in-house. And if not, I like an explanation as to why this work cannot be done by the electrical and the civil engineering part of whatever you call it, the division. In particular, one thing that stood out to me in the first contract, it's the pavement design. This is bread and butter work for airport civil engineering. I was told before you were born, 30 years ago, we couldn't do anything else except for paving, and that was our specialty. And now we're contracting that work out. I don't think that's right, but I could be convinced. So I'm asking today if you can explain to me, if not, or in addition to it, I would like to see a staffing plan to see how you're going to staff up this project. What's the consultant's going to do, the contractor going to do, and what city staff going to do? And if you had sufficient staffing, how could this work be brought in-house?
Okay.
Those are my questions and concern.
Okay. I'll be providing a staffing plan to you at a later date.
Okay. So would you be amenable to postponing each of these three contracts until such time, unless there's an urgency here? I don't want to stop your work. You guys do great work out there. I love the airport. Unless you tell me that there's an absolute emergency deadline, I'll leave it up to you in terms of when you can provide that information to the commission, and then we can.
There is some urgency. These three have been in the works since February. We work with the unions. They have a lot of questions, and I've responded to those questions. I provided all the information that they sought, and it's been going on since February. We've been postponing our schedule. We've been pushing it out. So that's my one area of concern.
Have you resolved all your questions, your concerns with, I think in this case, mostly Local 21, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Are they satisfied with your answers?
I submitted all my responses and additional information, which I've included in the package.
Okay.
To the commission.
Okay.
On 8/27, I haven't heard back from them.
Okay. Notwithstanding that, would you be willing, or how much time do you need to come back with the staffing plan for each of the three contracts that I pulled?
I will have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
I'll probably have an answer to you via email within a week or so. To
the executive officer, yeah. Please. Yeah, I appreciate the time because this is very important to me. I think these are very important, very interesting projects, but I think some of this work could be done, and I believe they have been done by in-house staff. But minus the, I'll believe you that there's insufficient staffing, but you guys are a revenue generating enterprise department, so you should be able to get some additional help from the mayor's office with regard to releasing some of these requisitions to higher up. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Did you want to make a motion on all three of those contracts?
So
I had one question.
Were you, I'm sorry. Excuse me,
Mr. Madrigal. There was one in the package that you sent us. There was an August 7th meeting scheduled with Local 21, which had yet to happen. Just wondering what the results of that August 7th meeting were.
So on August 7th, we did meet with the union. Our CDO was included in that meeting and our director of project management. We reviewed the scopes and essentially it was a good faith effort where we engaged and we listened to their concerns and we agreed to provide cost breakdowns of our project. And with that, that was the agreement that we were send out the cost breakdown and answer all the questions that they had, the 7 questions that they had, which we did. And therefore on August 27th, when I submitted those questions and additional information to the union.
Is 21 in the room, just out of curiosity? No. Okay. All right. I appreciate your openness and I look forward to additional information from the airport. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
You want to make a motion?
So
on all
procedurally, do I make it separately or do I make it all together?
All together.
Make it all together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And make sure you can include the condition.
Okay. So I move that we postpone PSC number. I'll just cite the last 4 digit. Would that be all right?
Hold on a second. I thought that you were at an emergency.
Okay.
Yes, that's.
This was an emergent type of situation and that perhaps we have to request that there's a follow up report on the staffing plan.
That's what I prefer. Yes.
You would be able to get the timeline for that staffing report to the executive officer by next week or so. And so.
Would one postponement to the next meeting be sufficient for the airport?
Well, we continue to delay our contracts. This all started back in February and has been, and I think we provided all the information, but I'm happy to entertain these new questions from you. And I would need, but if we can get a conditional approval for now and commit to those questions at a later date, that would be, I'll be appreciated.
That would include that you have a conditional approval that you we've approved, but there would be a staffing plan that would be presented. And there could be, let's see, this is a 5-year, if I recall correctly, it was a 60-month. Four years, but we could request that a report be done sooner than that.
I would like to see, I don't want to say it's my paranoia. I would like to see the staffing plan, and I know you have something, right? I know you have something. It's just a matter of transmitting that information to the executive office of the Civil Service Commission. I trust you guys. You guys are very talented people at the airport. You can pull this information up in no time. And I think one postponement to the next meeting in October. I'm sorry that you have to, you've been dealing with this since February, but this is first time before the commission. And knowing what I know about the airport and knowing the stuff that the good work and the great work that you guys are doing and have done, I just think that if you can plan 60 months ahead to contract the workout, you certainly can project the number of staff that you're going to need within the next 5 years and bring some of that work in-house if those staff were hired by the airport. I think there's got to be some give and take here. And
I'm willing to commit and to answer those questions. But again, my concern this has been dragged out quite a few months, and it's starting to affect our critical path. And
where are you with on this critical path with these 3 contracts? Have you pushed out the RFQ, RFP?
We're finalizing oral interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other, we haven't advertised as of yet.
Which one has not been or have not been advertised?
Super Bay has not been advertised.
So which one is that?
That's
the third one. Okay.
The third one. Yes.
Okay.
And
what about the other one, the second one?
And for ACIP, the second one, the 5350, that has been advertised.
Okay.
We've had conducted our, it's out in the street.
Okay.
And we're,
and then the first
and
one.
The first one, we actually had interviews last week.
Okay. I think I know what to do. Right.
You got.
Yeah. I'm gonna propose that we have conditional approval for 5223 and 5350, subject to a staffing plan from the airport.
We'd like to have back and also a report before the 4 years in addition to that. Like at 2 years?
Absolutely. If I'm still here, yeah. 2 years, 1 year, I don't care. Whatever you're
still young enough.
Thank you so much for that. And I'm going to penalize you for the third one. So the third one, since you have not advertised it yet, I'm going to hold off to that one until such time that the department or the airport provide a staffing plan to the commission. Okay.
All right,
but
thank
I appreciate you. the comment. All right. Would that be all right? So let's summarize.
Okay. Summarize. Okay. So
Conditional approval on 5223. 5350, subject to a staffing plan from the San Francisco International Airport and an annual report on these two contracts. And then on 5417, we postpone that contract until such time the airport provide the commission a staffing plan on the work that is being proposed to be contracted out.
So then we would need two motions then for that.
Okay.
I would think that would, for it to be clarified, we need to have the two motions.
Okay.
Because we have 5223 and 5350, which have the same motion.
Okay.
And then let's make a separate motion on the 5417.
I move that the commission approve 5223 and 5350, subject to the airport providing a staff report for each of the contracts, and also providing the commission an annual report on staffing needs and staffing plan on these two PSCs. Does that make sense?
Hold on a second.
Annual.
No, in the staffing plan, sir.
No, staffing plan ASAP, and then subsequent to that. Oh.
Okay, by, let's say, November 1.
November 1st? Victor?
First week in November.
Okay. Please come up.
So that would be the first meeting in November.
Yeah. Would that be all right?
November 1st, yes.
Okay.
And the first meeting in November.
Okay.
You say it again so it's clear what the motion is.
Okay. I move that we approve PSC 5223 airport for $75 million and PSC 5350 airport for $60 million, subject to the airport providing the commission staffing plan by the first commission meeting in November, and a subsequent annual reports on staffing on each of these two contracts.
Okay. Will do.
Okay. That's one motion.
Mm-hmm.
Second.
Okay. Okay. All right. So we have a motion and a second. Do we have any public comment on the motion? If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
Commissioners, if I could also add just for the department that the first meeting in November is November 3rd, which means that staff report will be due to our office on Thursday, October 23rd by 11 a.m.
So if you're... I'm sorry. Is it, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have.
Yeah, I think that was clear.
We have nobody so far. No one has come forward to the podium in to make public comment. Do we have anybody on the phone, Ms. Aldana?
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay. I'll do a roll call vote. Vice President Minor.
Aye.
Commissioner Leung.
Aye.
Commissioner Wood.
Aye.
And I vote aye. The vote is unanimous. Shall we go to the next?
The second motion, which would be PSC 5417 airport for $30 million. We postpone that contract until such time that the airport provide the commission a staffing plan.
Do you want to have it date certain?
It's first meeting in November?
Or before that?
Before, okay. please come up.
That would be easier because all.
Yeah.
Yes, the first meeting in November is fine with us.
To the first meeting of November.
Right, shall we go on to?
Do we need to vote?
Yes, excuse me.
Second.
As I say, we have a long agenda. Excuse me, not that I'm trying to rush this through, but anyway, so I'll do the roll call vote. Vice President Minor, my public comment, yes. If you have any public comment on the motion, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, I'll do the roll call vote. Vice President Minor?
Aye.
Commissioner Leong?
Aye.
Commissioner Wood?
Aye.
And I vote aye.
Thank you.
The item is postponed to the first meeting in November, November 3rd. Thank you. Shall we go on to the next one, which would be Public Health 5596.
Good afternoon, President Favetti and commissioners. My name is Milan Dowen, and I serve as the manager of contractual pre-award at the Department of Public Health. I'm here to present on PSC ending in 5596. This is a PSC for the Community Health Equity and Promotion Branch of DPH. It is to provide general program administration services for CHEPT programs. Joining me today is Nicole Trainer. We have prepared a presentation. We'd be happy to walk you through it, or we're here to answer any questions that you may have.
Yeah, I would like to hear a presentation because okay, I may have follow-up questions. Yes. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Nicole Trainer. Nice to see you all again. I'm with CHEP. I'm the Budgets, Contract, and Communications Manager. I'll begin once. Milan puts up the PowerPoint.
Excuse me. It's plugged in.
I think it's 101.
We can go to slide 2. Oh, can you all see it on your screens? All right, so what you have before you here is 2 program administration contracts that are covering 2 sets of services. One of them are for our jail health services, which are located at 850 Bryant, and we all know we have specialized programs within our jail system, which is amazing. And we also have services for our newcomers health program, which focuses on newly arriving refugees and also immigrants here in San Francisco. The PSC amount is an amount of $8.9 million. It will cover 2 contracts supporting 2 agencies. Those agencies have not been selected. It's in the review process now. I do want to note that the awarded program administrators only receive a 15% indirect cost, and all of the other funding goes directly to our programmatic services, okay, and a budget. We do have this is not new services. These will be continuation of current services that we have in place as of now. The contract that we are requesting is for 60 months, and there are several funding sources that are embedded within these particular services. So I'll break that down for you. For our HIV prevention funding, which is general funds, we've allocated $222,000, and that all goes to jail health services. The other program that for newcomers health, we've allocated some of our health education general funds, which is about $294,000. And we also get state grant funding, which is also filtered from the federal government. And that's for our refugee health assessment grant and our refugee health program planning grant. One is in the amount of $192,000. One is in the amount of $34,000. I do want to point out that we do incorporate some of our health education general funds just because of the current political climate with our current refugee and immigrant community. We want to ensure that we sustain those programmings, ensure that they have access to services and so forth. There are some grant cuts that are coming down the pipeline, and we are preparing for that. Although this allocation of grant funding is in place now, we have a backup plan with the general funds to ensure that there is no gap or disruption in our current services at the time. These program administration services, they act to provide our direct operational supports to client services. Because both of these programs are unique to the community, it's really important that we have the ability to be flexible, that we have the ability to be nimble, and that we have the ability to pivot based on the needs of the community, because they're constantly changing. And that's the core foundational piece of the program administration. They provide fiscal management, oversight, reporting. They also provide expedited accounts payable and procurements for some of our unique program operational needs. But most importantly, these two contracts do fund FTE. So across both of these contracts, there are about 6 employees. There's 2 phlebotomists on the jail health program side, and there's also 5 staff members from our newcomers health program. And just some historical background as to why we initially hired through program admins, specifically for the newcomers program. At one point it was 100% grant funded, and we know that that's not always secure. But the other piece is, because we're having newly arriving families and refugees, it's important that we are able to hire directly from the community with people who have this unique dialect, not just the language, but with the specific region, the specific town or village in which they speak. So we also know that, you know, these services, we hope to eventually transition, and I can tell you more about our transition plan for the staffing as well. But nonetheless, both of these programs are really unique to San Francisco, and I really think that our program administrators just have a different niche of making sure that we're reaching and hiring directly from the community with as minimal barriers as possible. I'll go to the next page. So some brief program description. So our jail health services, these are direct client services. As I mentioned, they all occur at 850 Bryant Correctional Facility. Our personnel provide expanded jail health services. We have integrated HIV, STI, and HCV testing. And it's one of the first in California is when you walk into the jail system, you have to opt out of this test. So meaning that everyone gets tested for HIV, hepatitis C, and also HIV. They're also linked to PrEP and PEP if needed. That's pre-exposure prophylaxis and post-exposure prophylaxis as well. Even when an inmate is being released, we have direct linkage to wraparound services, medical, and housing upon release. They work closely with City Clinic as well. That is on 756 Fulton Street. And so we ensure that even on late night when someone's released, that we have a linkage navigator there to connect with those individuals. We provide sexual health programming to some of the inmates as well. I used to be a program manager who would provide sexual health education and some of the pods there as well. Just to highlight, I think that incorporating sexual health programming in the jail health system is just beneficial to the entire community. And so for newcomers health program, our personnel are located. These are also direct client services, and they're located at the San Francisco Family Health Clinic. the new clinic there. They engage and provide refugee health assessments. They also follow up with linkage to newly arrived refugees. We provide them with housing, information, medical treatment as well. Again, a lot of the staff that we have on the team, they have special language dialect that is required for this specific program. And it's also required by the state grant as well, that we ensure that we're hiring staff with this special language dialect. And so again, in addition to just providing medical services, we also are linking some of the families to other wraparound services as well to ensure that they're not lost in the system. Thank you. And now I'm open to some of your questions.
Thank you for the presentation. Yes. This clarifies some of the questions that I had.
Sure.
One question for me is that there's 85% of the 8.96 is going to go to direct services. Will the contractor, whoever they are, will they be the one hiring personnel to do the services that are listed in the PowerPoint presentation?
Yes, with the, of course, assistance of the program managers within the system care, there are currently staff hired in this position. And our hope is that the new vendors will continue with those staff and we don't have to rehire for them.
When you say staff, these are civil service employees?
They are not civil service. They are contracted employees through the two program administrator contracts. Yes.
So that leads me to my next question.
Yes.
Could this work be done, some of this work be done by civil service employees?
So historically, so the phlebotomist job positions, there is currently no class. So we've had extensive meetings also with the union, and I was able to provide them with really granular level detail so they can understand why we are currently contracting these staff out. So for the phlebotomist positions, there's currently no civil service classification. That's just for phlebotomists. We talked about, can a nurse practitioner do this work? Yeah, of course, but not at the amount of the budget that we have, and could a medical assistant also do this work? But unfortunately, the funding allocation that we have right now only supports in the salary range of a CPT-1, which is a certified phlebotomy technician. As far as the newcomers program, like I mentioned, we originally hired outsourced because of the grant funding limitations to that.
Not aware of the limitations.
Well, the grant fundings are not always necessarily sustainable.
Oh, I see.
Specifically with this unique design of this funding, it's specifically for refugees and immigrants. As we know right now, there are significant cuts that are happening. And so I will say that we have been successful in transitioning. I'm always a huge advocate of program administration contracts being used as a pathway to civil servants. I think it builds up skill within our employees who necessarily don't have the privilege or the ability to sit for testing. And we are in the plan of getting approval for some CAT 18s for the newcomers staffing. That was put on hold simply because of the current administration's funding restrictions. So we decided to keep them in the current program administration contract as of now. But our goal is to hopefully transition those staff, but there is a process.
Would it be useful to create a new class for phlebotomists? Or if I recall correctly, we would use LVN with a certification in phlebotomy.
I believe LVNs do have a certification for phlebotomy, but the job description itself and what we're asking for the jailhouse services is simply to draw venipuncture blood draws. And so
it's just solely that activity over and over and over again.
And rapid
and
testing.
Is it only within the department? Are there other areas where that kind of service would be utilized? Is that not the case then?
Were other departments where phlebotomy would be used?
Yeah, within the Department of Public Health. In other words, you have a certified phlebotomist for doing the blood draws, right?
Right.
Okay. There must be other areas within the department where that's all they would do. Would it be useful to have a classification or, you know, a special condition, whatever, that would then be within the department, then that service could be brought in-house?
Oh, absolutely. We're not having a classification for a phlebotomist or a certified phlebotomist. Yes, I was surprised not to find one. I actually did some extensive research on my own prior to meeting with the union. And so,
yeah, it's been a long-term discussion.
Okay.
If I know it from, I don't even want to tell you how many years. That'll really embarrass myself.
Correct. We recently had a contract.
Yeah.
that spoke to this issue.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah. So, I want to say a couple, few months back. I don't remember the specific month, but it's within this fiscal year. So I think it would be worthwhile to explore with, not to put DHR on spot, work with DHR to see the feasibility of creating a classification to bring this work, at least this part of the work, in-house.
Of course, not opposed to that at all. Definitely agree 100%.
Yeah, right?
Right.
Okay.
Because it could be used throughout the department, and it's come so many times.
Yes.
Often.
Yeah.
That you begin to wonder, wait a minute, you know, this isn't something that's going to go away.
Yeah, agreed.
And as I said,
long-term.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm satisfied with the answers provided, and thank you so much. But I would encourage you to work with Department of Human Resources on the feasibility of creating this classification. Maybe report back to the commission at some time down the road.
Yes, will do. And thank you all for taking the time to listen to this important work and for your continued support. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely support the work. Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Just a clarification question.
Yes.
The attempt to transition with proposed job classifications that got put on hold because of our current budget crisis, was that limited to the newcomer program or both of the programs that are?
So both of the programs are unique in a way. It's one, it was limited to the newcomers program because of the whole funding from the federal level may cut the funding. But for jail health services, it's a different situation where there's no classification to hire through a phlebotomist. And I definitely take the feedback and work with my team in trying to determine even how to begin to have those conversations. I'll take it back to my executive leadership team to figure out how we can bring phlebotomists on as permanent civil service and staff members.
So it could either be a licensed personnel with a special condition, or it could be as a phlebotomist tech, phlebotomy tech, or whatever, I think.
CPT-1, yeah.
Yeah.
Certified phlebotomy technician.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a new occupational series, and it would be a nice promotable opportunity for even some of the...
even a health worker.
Yes. I mean, yes. Health. Yeah. Oh, yes. Health workers.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I love that.
I do want to point out one of the things that CHEP does in workforce development. BAMA is an institution who certifies phlebotomists. They are a vendor of the city. And what we've been trying to encourage is current staff to also take that program and support the funding of that program. So our internal staff, whether you're a program coordinator, a health worker, can get certified in phlebotomy. So those are some ways we're trying to circumvent that. But again, I mean, you can imagine some of the barriers and challenges of job descriptions and so forth, but that is one thing that CHEP is trying to do and support with workforce development for that particular skill.
Great. You want to make a motion?
Great discussion. Thank you so much.
Great,
I move that
you.
We approve this contract.
Thank you.
President Favetti, we need a date for the service now. So if you'd like to bring a discussion point back for the phlebotomist class, maybe
did
6 months.
To?
We need to enter a date in the service
okay.
now.
All right. I'm going to dispute the same.
Wait a minute. This is a
60 months.
60 months. So if we, I would say that this would be a 2-year kind of thing, because I understand where this is not the first effort in creating this class.
Yep.
It's not the first effort. So I can see in 2 years having a report back.
Okay.
And so that would be in 2 years.
Great. Perfect. Great. Thank you guys. So
I didn't realize we had all these requirements for ServiceNow.
So I move to approve this contract subject to a report back to the commission on the feasibility of creating a phlebotomist class in 2 years. So that would be September of 2027.
Yeah.
We have a
second.
Do we have any public comment on the motion? If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press *3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay. We have somebody coming to the podium, though. Thank you, Ms. Aldana.
Commissioners, good afternoon. Carrie Dahl, SEIU Local 1021. I want to thank DPH staff for meeting with us on August 20th. They answered some of our questions. However, at this point, we are in strident objection to this PSC. The discussion about the phlebotomy just confounds me to no end, because particularly at jail health, we have literally dozens of licensed and highly professional staff that can handle that kind of work, needless to say. When we had that conversation on the 20th of August, what came back was the budget, and I think Nicole Traynor discussed this to some degree, the budget provided for $26 an hour for this work. And so you can imagine the disdain that we have for contracting out when the concern is that we're not doing it cheap enough, is basically what we're being told. That's point one why we object. The next reason why we object is when we do the math here, we see it not really lining up. So when Nicole and the other DPH staff walked through the breakdown between what was going to jail health services and what was going to the newcomers program, we were told 220 per year for jail health and then roughly 248 for the newcomers. That number is now up to 294 as of today. When you add that up, you get 514,000 per year, and you multiply that by five, you get 2.57 million, yet they're asking for 8.96. So there's a disconnect in our minds. When we asked that question, what we were told was there needed to be some wiggle room, quote unquote, so that in the moment when there would be a surge of the need, this extra money would be sitting around. So in a moment where our membership is being asked to work in de-staffed contexts, our membership is being asked to work in morbidly unsafe conditions, such as Laguna Honda's old building, which we're going to be discussing at the Health Commission next door at 4 o'clock. Budget cuts here, budget cuts there, but we're going to give Haluna Health or some other vendor, an extra few million just to sit around. So those are the primary reasons why we're in opposition, and we hope that you send DPH back to the planning board to come up with another solution. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commission. Kristen Hardy, Vice President for SEIU 10-1. I'm also a rank and file member, one of four birth and death clerks at San Francisco General. I've been with DPH for 14 years, started off as a health worker too, and now I'm representing 16,000 public sector workers all throughout the city, including DPH. The reason why I am coming and object to this contract being passed today is due to the fact, like my colleague Carrie Dahl, who is the staff that represents jail health, has inclined. We do have LVNs currently already at jail health, and they are already licensed with phlebotomy and can already be doing this work. The fact that these departments come to civil service and try and push through these contracts because they're frustrated with the long hiring process and the regiments of going through civil service, all these processes and procedures have been put in place for a reason, just to stop these shortcuts. So if we are unable to catch them, they do sometimes fall through and they get these big billions of dollars of contracts. When I have members out here that are facing losing their jobs because supposedly we're in a $1 billion deficit, but they're able to get these contracts to hire contractors instead of hiring or fulfilling these vacancies that they have in their departments. They have LVNs that can do this duty, health workers that can do this duty. Just in the DPH sector alone, SEIU 10-1 has came up with a career ladder that we just got in our last contract, where we are allowed for people that are in lower classifications, say a health worker one, for them to be able, funding that's provided half by the union and half by the city, for them to take classes to move up into a higher classification or to get certifications to where they can do other jobs. So if they're looking for a phlebotomist and I have a health worker one and they have this training available, then that member can utilize the funds to get this training and move and do that work instead of contracting it out. So with that being said, the amount and all the statements that my colleagues stated before, I am urging you guys to send DPH back to the table to discuss this further with the unions affected and to figure out a plan to where we can keep this work in-house. Any dollar, whether it's $500,000 or $30,000, should be reflected and re-looked upon. Thank you. And Commissioner Favetti, can you please speak into the mic? We're having a hard time hearing you.
Oh. Guess I have to move this thing.
Hey, come.
Okay.
Good.
Testing. Is that better?
Okay.
Is there any other public comment? Okay. Commission.
I think the department.
Yeah. Would the department like to address some of their concerns?
Maybe specifically the cost issue that was raised.
Sure. Thank you. So I just redid my calculation. I'm not sure where Carrie is getting the 17 million TSC, but I can reiterate the numbers for you so that we are all clear. So for jail health services, it's $220,000 annually. So that's for 5 years. And if you would take the 220 and multiply that by five, that's about 1.1 million. That also includes the 12% contingency as well. For health education, we have 294,761.
And that's over 5 years?
That's over 5 years, plus the 192,403 is grant funding, and the 34,684 is also grant funding, and that comes about to $521,000. However, like I noted in the presentation, the line items of 192,403 and the 34,000 will be significantly reduced. So we're waiting on the NOA for that as well. We hope it won't be reduced, which is why we're moving forward with the base amount as it is. We're going back and forth with the state right now to advocate for the urgency of this work, also because it's funding our FTE for those positions as well. We don't want to have a significant gap in services. So based on my calculations, the current PSC amount of 8.9 million is correct. And again, this is including a 12% contingency amount.
Say within, say, 2 or 3 years, you find that you can bring some of this in-house, then you could always modify it, no?
Oh, I'm not in disagreement with Carrie and the union at all. We've had extensive conversations about this work coming in-house. I've been an advocate for that, trying to work right. At this moment, this work is crucial. And the services that we have in place, I want to ensure that we can continue those so they're not disruptive. That doesn't mean that I'm not going to continue to try to move forward with bringing these FTEs in-house. The staff who are funded under the newcomers program, they have taken exams, they have been coached through to try to get on specific lists. I am working with the executive leadership team to approve the CAT 18 positions. We are also, as a directive, in a hiring freeze as well. But even the executive leadership team within PhD is supportive. They understand the request. And we just held off on moving forward with requesting position numbers and form threes for these positions just because of the current political landscape amongst our refugee immigrant population. Nonetheless, I have been in in-depth conversations with our executive leadership team. I think I mentioned to you all before, the last time I was here, we were successful. There were two staff that we had under Haluna Health, and those are moving forward. So they're currently funded in Haluna Health contract now, but our goal is by December, or hopefully no later than June, that they will become, have the opportunity to compete for their positions through the civil service permanent position process. So those have been, they went through the form three process. I'm excited about that. And I hope that I can do and be successful in the same way with these other newcomers position. But I'm asking for approval for these to move forward to ensure that there is no gap in services, to ensure that we sustain that until we can work out the logistical barriers within our system.
When is your next meeting with the union? If there's one.
There's no planned meeting with the union on this particular item. We've had several meetings with Carrie. We have talked about the phlebotomist issue. Go ahead.
So we met with Kerry on August 20th, as Kerry mentioned, and in that meeting, Kerry said he would send us an RFI, and we followed up at least three times, and we haven't received the RFI. And so now we're here today. We're happy to continue these conversations with Kerry and our SEIU colleagues.
Thank you.
Your call. Did you want to make any amendments?
No.
No. Okay. Thank you very much. Is there any further public comment? If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, and to repeat the motion, this would be that this is approved with on the condition that within the next 2 years, the department comes back to report on the possible classification, a new classification of phlebotomist technician, or however it might be possibly, or to address that particular scope of work. So I'll do the roll call vote. Vice President Minor?
Aye.
Commissioner Leung?
Aye.
Commissioner Wood?
I'm going to vote no. I just want to explain what's crossing my mind is what a direction we might want to go, and specifically with the jail population is. Fire alarm, huh?
So I would just.
Stairs down?
Yeah.
Please take the stairs down and out of the building.
Stairs down.
Please take the stairs down. Thank you.
President Favetti, the recording is now on. It is 3:36 p.m.
Thank you. And this is, we are returning from our pause due to a an emergency that we do not know the cause that and our required evacuation at 3:01. So now 3:36, 3:37, around there. Okay, so let me recap where we are. We are on the ratification agenda, item number 7. We are on contract number 5596, Department of Public Health. We have had a motion, which is to conditionally approve the contract with a requirement to report on the possible classification of the phlebotomist technician or that scope of work. And that would be within 2 years. And we have had that motion. We've had a second. We have taken public comment. And we had a rebuttal to the public comment. We had a request to determine whether or not the originator of the motion wanted to change the motion. It did not, so the motion stands. I am now going to take the roll call vote. Is that what everybody, okay. Yes. Any additions? All right, so roll call vote, Vice President Minor.
Aye.
Commissioner Leung.
Aye.
Commissioner Wood.
No.
Oh, that's correct, and you were gonna be saying you had your-
First of time, just, no.
Okay, so you already have that on the record. And then I vote aye. So the vote is 3-1 with one dissenting. Commissioner Adam Wood dissenting. So we shall go on now to our the next contract, which is a PUC, but it's
5547.
5547. Thanks. 5547. Commissioner Leung?
No.
Oh, here it is. This might be my cheat sheet.
Hi, Chandria Hill, the PSC coordinator for PUC.
Hi, thanks for being here. I have the same issues that I did for the airport. I understand this is a 10-year contract, and I think some of this work, I like the work, but I think some of this work could be done by in-house staff. So I'm just wondering whether you guys have a staffing plan for this project, and whether you could, if you do, whether you could share that with the commission.
Okay, the contract owner headed back to the office. I think he's on his way back, so
okay.
Maybe do the next one and then, oh, well, that is Todd Kiger, but we're waiting on the contract owner, so he's on his way back all right. Now.
Okay.
We can hold this until he gets back. Should we go on to the consent agenda? Executive Director Ng, could you call out the next item?
On the consent agenda, all matters on the consent agenda considered by the Civil Service Commission will be acted upon by a single vote of the commission. There will be no separate discussion on these items unless a request is made, in which event the matter shall be removed from the consent agenda and considered as a separate item. Commissioners, I will have to read all the items. Item 8, SFMTA Provisional Appointment Report, Fiscal Year 25, Recommendation of the Municipal Transportation Director, adopt the report. Item 9, Report on MTA Service Critical Appointments Exempt from Civil Service under Charter Sections 10.104-16 through 10.14-18 for Fiscal Year 25, Recommendation of the Municipal Transportation Director, adopt the report. Item 10, SFMTA Position-Based Testing Report for Fiscal Year 25, Recommendation of the Municipal Transportation Director, adopt the report. Item 11, report of proportion of appointments exempt under Charter Sections 10.104-1, 2, and 4 through 12, recommendation of the Human Resources Director, adopt the report. Item 12, report on the status of enhancing employment opportunities for city employees pilot program, recommendation of the Human Resources Director, adopt the report. Item 13, request to approve a report of fiscal year 2024 through 25 contracts with San Francisco Health Service System, continuing approval. Recommendation of the Human Resources Director, approve the report. Item 14, report back on PSC DHR PSC 0004938 from the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. Recommendation, approve the report. Item 15, report of exempt appointments, position requests, and expired appointments under Charter Section 10.104-16 through 10.104-18 for the period of July 1, 2024 through June 30, 2025. Recommendation of the Human Resources Director, adopt the report.
Okay, commissioners, that is the consent agenda. We, and during our announcement item on the agenda, there were no severances. I don't see that there, we also asked for the public if they wanted to have any items severed. Okay, if there's a member.
Hello, Jesse Stanton, SEIU 10 to 1 rank and file member on behalf of SEIU 10 to 1 Rep. Naj Daniels, would like to separate item 14. The report back PSC DHR PSC 004938 from the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing.
Oh, I don't know if we have a representative for that department, because that's why we asked for it at the very beginning of the agenda.
I understand, and I apologize for the tardy notice. I could just make public comment on the motion.
Oh, that would be fine. Okay, so I'm going to be asking for a motion on the consent agenda.
President Favetti, I move that we approve the consent agenda, which would be agenda items 8 through 15. 15.
Well, maybe I have, I'm sorry, excuse me. I have the amended agenda. I apologize. Okay. Yeah, I apologize. 8 through 15, excuse me.
Second.
All right. And do we have any public comment on the motion on the consent agenda?
Yes, Jesse Stanton, SEIU 10 to 1 rank and file member. On item 14, the report back on PSC DHR PSC 0004938 from the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. Report here is on the discussions with the union, between the union and management on this PSC and the feasibility of bringing the work back in house. And during those discussions, the department has just maintained that they have no intention to bring the work back in house. They just are not going to do it. And you can see there on the attachment, the question 6, please provide a plan to transition. First sentence, the department does not tend to transition this work back to civil service. And so we feel like this was a not a successful effort. And we feel like the department has determined that they're going to go ahead with contract this out, regardless of whether the work could be done by civil service classifications or not. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. So this was approved in March 3rd, 2025. Okay. So, is there any commissioner who wishes to make a.
Yeah, I actually do. Thank you for raising it. I do remember reading the email exchange between the union and the department on this one. I would be interested in finding out what's going on.
So maybe separately under commissioner's report or request, we can ask for a follow-up report on this. Would that be
feasible, Commissioner Leung?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so we're going to, so is there any other public comment? If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, I'm going to do a roll call vote. And just to for public information, we are going to be requesting, as part of commissioner requests, to have a follow-up report on item number 14, and specifically contract number 4938 from the Department of Public Health. Vice President Minor?
Aye.
Commissioner Leung?
Aye.
Commissioner Wood?
Aye.
And I vote aye. So let us go on to the consent agenda. All items on the consent agenda have been approved. Let us go on to the next item on the regular agenda.
Are we now returning?
Sorry, Chandra Hill with PUC. Our contract owner is here. Can we go back to our item?
Sure can. We'll go back to item number 7.
Go ahead. Okay.
Hello. Hello, good.
Hold on a sec. We have to do for the announce for
we're returning
for the
back
record.
To the ratification agenda regarding our personal service contracts. And we are looking at the PUC personal service contract, DHR PSC 5547V0.01.
Thank you so much. Go ahead and state your name.
Yeah.
And your
good afternoon, President Favetti, commissioners. My name is Jimmy Leung. I'm a project manager for SSPUC.
Thank you. Commissioner Leung.
Leung, nice to be nice to meet you. I want to better understand why this work that is being proposed to be contracted out for 120 months, why can't this work be done by PUC in-house staff? Mm-hmm. And I understand that there are divisions or sections that deal with each of these components that you listed here in the PSC.
Right.
And you have very qualified staff who can do, may not be everything listed, mm-hmm. But at least some portions of the work listed, I think, could be and have been done by in-house staff.
Yeah, absolutely. And this RFP is for Power Enterprise, our Power Capital Improvement Program. And as you know, traditionally, PUC is focusing on street lighting or the interconnection to support the redevelopment projects. And going forward, actually, we are helping the city to do decarbonization. We partner with the port, as well as some private sector like Cordia and other company to electrify the system. So we are actually pivoting now from just doing the street lighting to be more strategically provide the main as a main power supplier for the municipality and large private organization. They want public power. So we are actually transitioning from street lighting to building major power transmission lines, substation, and street yard. So this is not a small thing, because from very low voltage to a high voltage, and high voltage need to also consider the power projection, power system modeling, which actually take it to the next level, which our staff is not knowledgeable enough to do everything like that. So our staff, some of our staff are experienced. They are tied up with what we have right now. So we are looking at our program in the next 10 years. So Commissioner, to answer your question, why is 10 years? Because PUC have a 10-year capital improvement program, which have been approved by our commission. So we're looking at the power program is about 1.5 billion in next 10 years. And we, instead of tackling the project separately, we have tried that, but was not very successful in coordinating all the effort. So we also learned from our water and wastewater program and incorporating a program management concept to help us better to collaborating with all these different projects, doing the strategic planning and institute the governance system so that we ensure that we can deliver the program as we promised. So that is why we look at the 10-year plan, we provide this support for 10 years. So 30 million is just representing about 2% of the 1.5 billion that PUC is going to spend on that. Hopefully I answer your question.
Do you, a little bit, I okay. Like, I enjoy the overview, appreciate it. Do you have electrical engineers who can do this work in terms of the technical support? I'm sure you do, right, in PUC?
Yes. So
are you saying that they're not qualified to, the electrical engineers do not qualify?
No, I'm not saying that at all. But the technical portion, we have some engineers who do that. But this RFP is for program management.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, focusing on strategic planning, as well as the program management part, which is less to do with the electrical or technical design itself. It's more about managing or organizing all different projects in a programmatic approach.
So I'll give you that one in terms of strategic, but you also list in PSC other areas that you need help with by a outside contractor, such as program administration, right? That part of it, I don't think it's technical, it's non-strategic. Mm-hmm. And I think you have staff who are program managers or project managers.
Right.
And PUC who may be able to do this work.
Yes, so here is the thing, and you're absolutely right. We have some staff have certain knowledge, we can help onto this. But at the same time, we also need support because our program is actually growing, and it is externally driven. So we actually, it is a 30 million contract for 10 years.
Yep.
If you look at that, it's about 3 million per year.
Right.
And we are also implementing that on a task order basis. So we are not giving the consultant saying that this is 30 million and go to spend it. No, this is not the case. We are looking at why our program being mature, our people getting higher. So we are getting the knowledge transfer to come in to have the consultant, it give them particular task order to do particular tasks together with our staff.
Okay.
And after they develop the framework, they will transfer the knowledge and give the training to our staff and growing that. And then they will roll on to a separate task, a different task to keep doing that. So this is not to take place of our own staff, actually help us grow in the manner that is commensurate with our program development.
Okay, I appreciate the explanation. I don't think it was spelled out in the PSC, but I understand, I have a better understanding in terms of the transition and who's.
Yes.
Would it be possible for you, Jimmy, to give us a staffing plan for each of these four areas that you listed in the PSC in terms of what is the consulting doing?
Right. Mm-hmm.
By the way, are you using an existing contractor or consultant already on board? Or
no, this is a very first RFP we issue for the power program.
Okay.
And currently our main focus is on organizing the strategic plan for the power program.
Right.
And then develop the program. So and we need to have a strategic plan as well as a program management plan in order to actually come up with a comprehensive staffing plan.
Right.
So I'm more than happy to share that with you as a request.
Okay.
But we do need some time for us to put the thing together after the consultant coming on board so that we can actually circle back with you with a realistic projection for what we actually need.
Okay. Where are you on the strategic plan with respect to staffing? I don't need all the secrets.
All right. So currently we are working on the capital budget right now.
Okay.
But the strategic planning actually take another level. So we haven't actually get into that too much. We have an idea making a so-called a master plan,
mm-hmm.
but we do need a consultant to come on board to help us.
Okay. How much time would you need, Mr. Leong?
About a year after the consultant come on board, our master plan, our idea is about 9 months.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So when do you expect the consultant to be on board?
If we get approval today, and then we will advertise the contract, we will expect the NTP by June next year.
Okay.
So after that, we'll add about 12 months. Then we probably will have a more tangible plan that we can share with you.
Okay, so you're looking at maybe mid-2027?
Yes, that sounds like.
Would your strategic plan include not just the program administration, but also what are the other project program delivery in terms of staffing as well? I'm only concerned about the staffing.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to do what work?
Understood. So, yes. So, I think in mid-27 is a reasonable timing for us to develop have a plan with the staffing support and come back to you. Okay. I think.
Is there anything now you can share with the commission or?
Oh, actually, we actually working on bringing new staff on board. And as a matter of fact, today is a big day. We have a program director just and then the capital budget lead started today. Good. We already hired two positions.
For this particular project?
For this program, for capital power capital program.
Okay.
And we actually are still working on the other two positions. There will be a capital planning director position which have been advertised. So we are going through the interview process to bring the on board to support this program. Okay. As well as we are having other staff like a project manager to bring it on board. So we are gradually working there, but we don't have all the information at this point. Yeah.
Okay. Those are all my questions. I appreciate the honesty. I hope that was honest. Those were honest answers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for your questions.
Mr. Wood?
Yeah, I just wanted to, it looks like in your proposal, years 6 through 10, the goal is for a gradual transition and handoff. Is that still the case?
Absolutely. The first 5 years is just establishing the program and the governance system. And then for 6 to 10, we are transitioning to our own staff. Hopefully we can pick it up by that time. So, yeah.
Actually, one last thing, I would strongly encourage you to talk to the affected unions. I think 21 is one of the major players here. Strongly encourage you to continue to talk to
Absolutely.
The unions and then talk about the staffing and in terms of moving some of this work. And I trust you on that institutional right. knowledge from the consultant to city employees. I heard that many times before. And
yes. Even for this RFP, just for your information, we did a check with public work as well as PUC engineering.
They can't do the work.
Yeah, so, but we are also, we're talking to Local 21 as well through TAL.
And Local 6 as well, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So I yes. move to approve this contract subject to a report back to the commission in mid summer of 2027 on a staffing plan, and including that staffing plan, hopefully we'll see some institutional knowledge transfer and any ideas in terms of how to bring this work back in-house in the later years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That sounds reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leon.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
Do we have any public comment on the motion? If you're here in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press *3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
I do a roll call vote. Vice President Minor?
Aye.
Commissioner Leong?
Aye.
Commissioner Wood?
Aye.
And I vote aye. The vote is unanimous. Thank you very, very much. Okay, shall we go on to our next item?
We are on the regular agenda. Item 17, request for changes to CSC Rule 114 and status grant from Class 8302, Deputy Sheriff 1, to Class 8504, Deputy Sheriff for affected employees. Recommendation of the Human Resources Director, adopt the staff report, implement role change, and grant status to 8504 to the affected employees.
Hello,
Mr. Ponder.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Commissioner Steve Ponder, Class and Comp Director for DHR. I don't have a presentation, but if you have any questions, I'm available.
Commissioners, any questions, comments? No. Okay. Do we have a motion?
Good seeing you, Steve.
Good to see you. And thank you, Sandra St. Levine. I appreciate all your help getting this through.
Well, hold on a sec. There is a couple of questions. Vice President Minor.
We'll go very quickly. Thank you for being here. And it's always good to see this kind of work that.
There's a couple of questions.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. As I was saying, it's always good to see the union and the city working together to make these necessary changes to make certain that there's equity in our system. Just a couple of questions. So between 12 and 19, that's a pretty long period of time, mm-hmm. you know, affecting a fair number of people. Is there a significant difference in the employee contribution to the miscellaneous plan versus the sheriff's safety plan that these people will be moving into?
No, it's about a one-year period. The contribution is about a 0.5% difference. So once we get approval, what we'll be doing, there'll be additional deductions taken over 4 pay periods. It's going to be about $250 a pay period. And so we sat down and worked with the union to make sure to map that out for employees that that would not be too big of a burden for them to do. So, yeah.
Okay, very good. And then my second question, does this change only affect people who are still employees of the system?
The way this is presently set up, correct, because that's the mechanism by which we can take the money out. Once we wrap this process up, we are still engaging the union to think about if people have left. We've noticed some people have quit the city, some people have gone on to some different things. So I think we will circle back for that group. But at this point, we wanted to focus on, I think, the 150 or so that are here in the city.
Okay. Do you know the size of the group that has left the city that may potentially be affected?
Yeah, because again, typically those are going to be people, laterals that left, or people that I don't have that in front of me though. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be much smaller, but about 20 or 30 people. And again, I think a lot of those people probably left early. So I'd probably not in their interest. It's really the more long-term employees that will be getting a service credit. So I think there'll be a pool, but I think of the people out there, only a handful will want to do it. So I think that the union's identified 2 people of interest at this point. I just didn't want to cloud everything else at this point with that, but we will be circling back on that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your responses. Mm-hmm. I'm ready. Did somebody make a motion?
Oh, no.
Okay. I move that we adopt the report.
Second.
Do we have any public comment on the motion to adopt the report regarding Civil Service Commission Rule 114 and status grant for Class 8302 Deputy Sheriff 1 to 8504 Deputy Sheriff? If you're in the room, as I say, come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, roll call vote. Vice President Minor?
Aye.
Commissioner Leung?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
And I vote aye. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care. Now we'll go to the next item.
Item 18, proposed amendments to Civil Service Commission Rule 212 to support the San Francisco Police Department hiring of lateral and external Police Academy graduate candidates. Recommendation of the Human Resources Director, adopt the report.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Lisa Pagula, Assistant Director of Employment Services at Department of Human Resources. On behalf of the Department of Human Resources, I'm presenting the report to the Commission on the proposed amendments to Civil Service Commission Rule 212 to support the San Francisco Police Department's recruitment of lateral and external Police Academy graduate candidates. The SFPD continues to face high vacancy rates for Q2 police officer positions, which is true for many law enforcement agencies nationwide. This has made attracting experienced officers increasingly difficult. Publicly posting eligible lists for lateral and external academy graduates raises several concerns. It exposes applicants who are often still employed by other law enforcement agencies to actions by their employers to disincentivize or create a barrier to transferring. It discourages candidates from applying due to risks of professional and interpersonal consequences, and it makes it easier for other agencies to poach candidates from our lists. To address this, DHR proposes a rule amendment, that removes the requirement to post these eligible lists online while maintaining public access via the California Public Records Act. The proposed rule change improves confidentiality for lateral and external academy graduate applicants, encouraging them to apply without fear of negative consequences. It also aligns SFPD practices with regional law enforcement agencies, including Oakland Police Department, San Jose Police Department, Sacramento Police Department, and our own San Francisco Sheriff's Department. It enhances SFPD's competitiveness in recruiting already trained officers who can be hired more quickly with lower onboarding and training costs. And it addresses direct feedback from candidates and recruitment staff who report losing candidates due to concerns about negative consequences from their current employers. Although the eligible list will no longer be posted publicly online, they remain accessible to the public via PRA request. All candidates will still be subject to the full background investigation process, and lateral candidates are further vetted through review of personnel, internal affairs, and background files from their current law enforcement agencies and through a post-certification check per California SB 2, which ensures that no candidate with a pending or sustained misconduct case can be hired in any California law enforcement agency. This proposal only affects the online posting of lateral eligible lists and external police academy graduate eligible lists. It does not change the posting of entry-level Q2 eligible lists or the posting of promotive-only eligible lists. DHR has met with the Police Officers Association. They are receptive to the proposed change. The mayor's office has also expressed support, recognizing this as a critical step toward addressing police staffing needs. This proposed amendment to Rule 212 is a practical, targeted change that helps protect candidate confidentiality, removes barriers to application, and supports more efficient and effective hiring of experienced officers. It aligns with broader Bay Area practices and enhances our ability to compete for and retain top public safety talent. Captain Frost from the SFPD Staff Services Division and Anna Biaspas, Employment Services Director from DHR, are also here to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions?
I had one question. Just does the department have any numbers on the number of lateral candidates that have been hired, say, in the last five-year period or any recent period that you have numbers for?
Hi, Commissioner. Yeah, we can get you metrics on that. Off the top of my head, looking at dashboards that we have from that are updated daily, I believe our increase in lateral candidates from this year compared to last year, we're up 25%. We're anticipating hiring more laterals and going on a directed recruitment drive, given the added benefits to onboarding and experience that they bring.
All right. If you could please identify yourself for the record.
Sorry, Captain Sean Frost from the San Francisco Police Department Staff Services Division.
Did you say targeted recruitment to other departments, other jurisdictions?
Targeted recruitment in the sense that we are prioritizing those candidates as much as we can, given the severity of our staffing challenges, because they can be street deployed much faster than entry-level candidates.
So how are you recruiting from those other jurisdictions?
We're not recruiting from any one jurisdiction specifically. We're putting out the benefits of working in San Francisco relative to everywhere else in California and the nation.
Those targeted to particular jurisdictions?
No, to people who are already serving in law enforcement. We're not targeting one agency versus another.
So in other words, to other law enforcement and personnel, you are specifically zeroing in on that as a recruitment source.
As it relates to the recruitment of lateral candidates, you'd have to already be serving in a law enforcement post-certified capacity to to participate in that recruitment process. So yes, Commissioner.
Right. I was very instrumental in 1999, 2000 to establish the lateral lists.
Yes.
Streamline that process. Yes, I do have I see that Ms. Miasbas is here. Thank you very much, but please stay there.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Anna Biaspas, Employment Services Director. So currently we have been working with the Mayor's Office to help streamline the hiring process for a Q2 police officer, try to break down barriers where we're having experience. So Starting next week or so, we have three separate job ads for Q2. One is for, you know, entry level, meaning they were never a police officer. We have a separate one for Q2 laterals, which has slightly different requirements. And then we'll have a third one shortly for new grads or academy grads from other jurisdictions. And so they are all publicly posted, with the exception of the third one being posted soon. And so candidates apply through those processes. We're not just sending those job ads going like San Jose, we want you to all apply there, a public posting, just like the Q2 entry level. Does that answer your question?
Well, I have a lot of questions here, because it almost looks like we are trying to establish a poaching or an anti-poaching rule, and when we're kind of poaching from other jurisdictions, you know. So you've got the three different types of lists. So I was trying to relate that to the merit system, and how does that, the way I've come to the conclusion, well, we're trying to get the best qualified person, the best qualified applicants. But I have a couple of other things that I was a little bit concerned about. And I honestly thought that when we were going to be receiving some rules that were going to be streamlining the hiring for police officers, I thought it was going to be a little bit more extensive rather than just this. I mean, I have a number of concerns about it. And so you're trying, it sounds to me like we're trying to not allow for other jurisdictions to know that we've got their laterals on our list. Is that basically it?
That's correct.
Okay. So,
they still,
how does the public get to know about this? Remember, because you've also brought an issue to my attention, or to our attention actually, that I do want to address under commissioner request. Mm-hmm. And that is that, remember, these are the you know, I need to say something right from the very get-go. Number one, I have the ultimate and very profound respect for the uniform ranks of the police and fire and first responders everywhere. I'm the sheriff's department, EMTs, everybody. So my comments are based and from a very profound respect for this profession. Mm-hmm. I also have to say, professionally, I have advised many applicants, so many applicants that were on the Q2 eligible list that were not selected. They weren't rejected, but they weren't selected, about going to other jurisdictions and then reapplying for San Francisco. I have done that for many, many years. My third full disclosure that I need to tell you and put on the record is that I come from a very large extended family with much military, a lot of military individuals or members, as well as uniform ranks of police, fire, and sheriffs and EMTs. With that, I also know very well the number of laterals that have come very recent years, which also include part of that large, very large extended family. So I am looking at this with a bit of skepticism, to be perfectly honest. My understanding is that you are going to be going to do background checks, correct?
Correct.
You're not going to be doing a mini background check. You're going to do the normal background check. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're still doing the full background check, including contacting their current police department.
So is that jurisdiction not going to know that they're on the lateral?
They will know. Let me try to summarize this. So, as we know, nationwide, we are having problems recruiting police officers. And we're trying every avenue, whether it's doubling our test process, whether it's reformatting our job ad, et cetera, to try to expedite the process. This is just one of many ideas that we have been implementing. And the reason we are implementing this is because the police department has currently experienced, through recent lateral hires, along with candidates that the recruitment team have been talking to that's on the eligible list, is that some jurisdictions have disincentivized, is for lack of better words, their candidates from moving forward with their applications to San to San Francisco. We have noticed that other jurisdictions have been pulling up our eligible lists with names and coaching those people and saying, hey, we know you're looking for another job, another law enforcement job. You applied to San Francisco. Why don't you come to us then? So it's publicly posted, so multiple jurisdictions have the ability to poach these people. We are still doing backgrounding by limiting the eligible list not to be posted. We are not saying we're not letting the jurisdiction that they're working for know. They will find out through backgrounding, for one, but all the other jurisdictions doesn't need to know they're in the process. And really, that's our purpose. And also, currently, we are subject to the public records request, similar to Sheriff's Department. Sheriff's Department, we do not post the laterals. But they are, if you saw a memo that we recently issued, all eligible lists are subject to public records request when requested through that process. So we're just we're mirroring the miscellaneous side with the laterals and the academy grads, but we're not saying we're never ever going to give it when asked through public records.
And I have to say that because of this report, it brought to the surface that sometimes the rocks, you know, as the water level lowers, the rocks rise. And what I'm saying is that, in other words, the uniform rank of police and the Sheriff's Department are armed. With that comes a different standard. And what I see is that if it's not publicly posted like this, it is the public that is the one, the entity that doesn't know these individuals are on the list. It's right, you have an extensive background. I understand that. But this is just one element where perhaps a background investigation misses. And so I am somewhat concerned that we are no longer posting publicly the Sheriff's Department list, laterals. And it's only the laterals. And I find that I'm just concerned, especially in view of the public hearings that we conducted not that long ago, that where this was a concern, a significant concern. And the job of a San Francisco police officer is a difficult one. And the individuals who qualify, they go through especially in San Francisco, to be perfectly honest, we have psychologicals and background checks that are extensive, I know. But at the same time, we still have that other element, and that is the public and the public's right to know. So I am, as I say, I haven't quite reached over to be able to say that I can support this. To be honest, I have had expected to have other streamlining rules rather than just this. I don't find that at this point, And depending on how the other commissioners are feeling, if indeed there is a majority, I will be dissenting, because I just feel that what we are doing is undermining the public hearings that we had conducted just a couple of years ago.
May I point out an important factor? So the eligible list is created before the backgrounding. So just similar to sheriffs, if someone did not pass backgrounding, they're still on the eligible list. What we do with sheriffs right now is we post the appointments. So we could do the same for police, not post a public eligible list, but post the people who were hired. That could be a recommendation as well. That is what we do with police, sheriff, excuse me, you know, for your consideration. Because I understand you're concerned about passing or failing the backgrounds, but it doesn't happen until after the eligible list is created. Well,
I'm quite aware of that. I have counseled too many eligibles on the eligible list. I know exactly that that happens, but it is still the fact that it is public. It is an issue where the public can comment. And there is a standard, the standards that we hold for uniform ranks of police and also for the sheriffs and for anybody actually who is armed. In fact, I was thinking not just sheriff's department, it is any one of our classifications that carry arms. And I believe in the 8,000 series, there are some, in addition to the sheriff, there is some. Those are my comments right now. I am certainly wanting to hear what other commissioners have to say, but I had hoped to... I can't see where this is going to. I just can't see at this point where this is going to prevent laterals from taking a job with the San Francisco Police Department. I know well that that eligibles that aren't selected and they have not been rejected will put it in their plan to come back to San Francisco, because coming to San Francisco is an honor. To come to be qualified for the uniform ranks of police and for the sheriff's department in San Francisco is an honor. And so for those eligibles, that desire to come to San Francisco is going to be the overwhelming issue as far as their desire to come back to San Francisco or come to San Francisco as a uniform rank in the uniform ranks.
Yeah, thank you, Madam President. Kind of what we're seeing is the entire gamut of incentives and disincentives to lateraling to the department from another agency. You're right, eventually the agency that they're applying from are going to know about that, but we can structure it in the background where everything is looking good to the point where we decide to go ask for a file review from that agency. So rather than doing it where we do it with a previous employer and reach out initially, very early in the process, we would ask the applicant that's a police officer in another jurisdiction about their service, and then we would sort of delay going and reviewing their file. Because if their file doesn't match up with their disclosures to us, they're not going to be selected, because dishonesty is a major component of the background, both entry level and lateral. What we're seeing with the lists, and I've been told anecdotally through a recruitment unit, is they're referencing our publicly available list that's easily publicly available because it's posted online. There's no request process for it. And we're seeing both sides of the spectrum with these folks. They are being offered positions in that agency, so they remain. Some are finding themselves in some kind of administrative disciplinary process. And it's not just a question of, hey, these folks will stick it out and come to San Francisco, because it is an honor to work here. And we're one of the premier law enforcement organizations in the country. But it's not a question of them being able to be persistent to do it. Some of these folks are ending up with situations where we will not take them. And what I'd hate to see is us lose out on applicants who have very insistent agencies when they're aware that somebody's applying elsewhere. So they end up kind of doing something that won't jeopardize their employment where they're currently at, but will make it so they are not a attractive candidate for us anymore. Nothing precludes any member of the public, if they want to double check our work, so to speak, or get ahead of it and vet anybody in the background, by requesting, and I believe this can be done online, making a PRA request for the eligible lateral list that will be publicly available upon request. I don't anticipate a lot of agencies taking a flyer to see if anybody is on the lateral eligibility list and requesting it from us. What we are seeing them do is access the World Wide Web right now, getting that list, and then taking measures if they see any of their current sworn staff on it to disincentivize their lateraling over to our organization.
Well, I did test it out. You know, how easy is it to get an SFPD list? Okay, so I did a number of inquiries, and I don't know if the AI was beginning or whatever that is, because getting smarter and smarter every request that I made, because every request I made, it got faster and faster and faster, because the first request I made did not come. But then I see, I'm also on Instagram with SFPD join and SFPD official and a couple of other SFPD and a number of other fire and other uniform rank kinds of because I'm always looking for recruitment and I'm always passing on recruitment flyers, both from DHR and as a PD, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I noticed that, you know what, even on Instagram, you've got all the pictures of everybody who's being appointed, okay? So it's not like it's confidential. And I'm just finding myself, as I have a hard time wrapping my arms around this particular thing, especially, as I say, what's always been in my mind is what we had as far as our public hearings just a couple of years ago. And although I have faith with as far as the background unit is concerned, I know that they are thorough. But on the other hand, I also know that I feel like we're missing one little piece, and that was as a result of a lot of our hearings. But let me hear from other commissioners if there is any other commentary. I do appreciate everything you've said. So,
Madam President, if I may, what public hearings are we referring to? Just so I know we're talking about the same things.
They were on the violence having hired individuals in uniform ranks that had a history of violence.
When were these public hearings?
It was the changes to Rule 210.8 after the George Floyd killing. And in fact, the chief participated, as did the sheriff. But it specifically, I made note of it in my comments here, just to think about 210.8.3, 8.4, and then the definition of serious misconduct in 210.8.5.
Okay. I'll address those. The murder of George Floyd obviously was a watershed moment, not just in the city, but nationally, worldwide. As a matter of fact, there were public demonstrations all over the world after that incident. The Senate Bill 2 that was passed in California is, my belief, designed to address that. The ability for officers to be hired from one agency to another with serious misconduct in another organization, given the reporting requirements to California's peace officer standards and training, is dramatically reduced since those hearings were held. I believe San Francisco, as we are always proud to be, this body no doubt practices that, are usually ahead of what goes on statewide and nationally. So that concern, even if it exists in San Francisco, or even if it's been addressed in San Francisco, is a valid one, given the possibility that another agency might not classify something as serious misconduct that we would. Then it would be incumbent upon us to discover that in a background investigation. Given what is likely what I believe came about after those rule changes was the Senate bill that took effect, if memory serves, in 2023. So the ability for other agencies to sort of kind of massage the classification of what would be serious misconduct to essentially offload a problem officer to an agency, an unsuspecting law enforcement organization, is significantly limited by the passage of SB2 and the reporting requirements of specific types of misconduct and the timeline of those reportings. And like our esteemed colleagues from DHR said, we won't be hiring anybody that has pending matters for post as it relates to serious misconduct. And if they've got, depending on what you don't necessarily have your peace officer certification revoked forever, depending on your level of misconduct. I can't imagine us even entertaining hiring somebody who had their certification suspended for anything other than the duration of an investigation from which they were cleared. If you're going to get suspended by post for any type of misconduct and you're trying to lateral to our department, I just cannot see anybody being accepted in a background. And then, Madam President, to your point about posting the lateral hires that we do have and publicly acknowledging them, we do that. Because usually when people are willing to leave their organization, it begets more folks coming over. But that wouldn't happen until they already are hired. So any threat to their incentivization to stay or disincentive would be gone once we actually publicly say this is who we just swore in, because that background and hiring has been completed.
I have a question. It's probably more historical and probably for Director Biaspis. I was surprised to see that the rules are different for sheriff versus police. Do you have any understanding of when we decided that lateral sheriffs didn't have to be posted?
It's because they were under the miscellaneous rules. And I did not, I missed that, quite frankly. And if I had been paying attention, I would have exempted them.
Unfortunately, although I've been with the city for quite a while, I was not over public safety for a very long time until not just a few years ago. I know it. Dave would tell me some, Dave Johnson, former assistant director, would tell me about
It has to do with the charter amendment. Yes. And it's because the uniform ranks of police and fire come in a different charter section. And unfortunately, what we debated over the years was whether or not we should separate out and set up a separate set of rules for whether it's going to be the uniform ranks altogether, whether it was going to be separate, or if we're going to be actually doing a separate one for sheriff. Mr. Johnson and I often discussed this, and we never got to the point where there we could make an actual decision on whether or not we should be separating the sheriffs off, because the standards are more similar to the uniform ranks of police than they are to miscellaneous. And so, in fact, that's something that maybe we need to consider somehow or another. But the rules that are set for the uniform ranks of police are so tied to the termination of the consent decree, as are the uniform rank of for the fire department. And so and so that's all tied into that. And since the sheriff's office did not have the separate charter section, as do police and fire, that's where we came. Anyway, I'm sorry, but I lived that for a long time.
I'm sitting next to our resident expert.
Yes. I was going to say, why are you asking me?
Are we able to track the number of people who go on our website to look at the posting?
That I'm not. I know we've been recently working with the data team. SFPD, again, this is important to the mayor. So DHR has been working closely with SFPD to track data, like how many times does someone click on how to apply and which website. I can find out that information, but I think there is some sort of tracking mechanism. I just don't know exactly how to explain it. I know we track recruitment sources as well, but yeah.
You know, when I initially picked up the packet and read the proposed changes, you know, the question that was in my mind is, oh, this sounds like another de-identify. Wherein we've got a problem that we all know we need to fix, but we've got to find the right solution, right? And sometimes there are multiple solutions. You know, as President Favetti has said, you know, there are other changes that we also need to incorporate in order to expedite, you know, the hiring. So I want to say that I just think it's critically important for public safety that we recruit more officers. That's really important for us to do. And like President Favetti, I'm like, well, the department is going to know. For laterals, if we're doing our background check, and I know we're doing our background checks because it's in everybody's interest that we have police officers who are committed to San Francisco and the residents of San Francisco. And so we have to do the background checks. And I saw that there was reference to Senate Bill 2 instead of our own rules, but they are substantially similar. I think our definition of serious misconduct is a little bit different. But my fellow commissioners, I feel like we got to try more things. And I'm open to trying this for a period of time to see if it starts to help address this issue that you've identified, which is not so much poaching, because I think that that happens across the board with laterals, but this notion of the HR department in another police department looking at the list and disincentivizing laterals from wanting to apply. I do think that that is a significant problem, because every jurisdiction is faced with the same issue, and your problem gets exacerbated if you can't keep the people you already have, right? And we are an attractive place. We pay well, you know, we've got a good force, we've got a good history. People do, in fact, want to come here. So I'm actually open to this rule change, provided we do a reasonable check-in to see if, in fact, it's beginning to help. It's not, it's probably not the final solution, but one of many solutions. And I actually look forward to coming back with more changes that are going to try to help us expedite hearing. But these changes, obviously, you can see very important for us and very important for you too, that we not do anything that's going to shorten the serious background check that's necessary for laterals to come to San Francisco. So those are my comments.
Vice President Minor, you brought up a very good point. We don't have any data here.
What data?
As far as data is, how many people have been either, you know, what, as far as the lateral, has there been those who have been disincentivized to even apply? Or there's some that are having, and there's nothing, no data included in this report.
Right. It's not something that, it's not a metric we consistently track. What we have, our recruitment team has had people withdraw because they said their department found out. And to everybody's point, it's been well discussed here. They're going to find out during the background. We wouldn't be doing a proper background if we didn't reach out to their current agency. It's they, some of them are dropping out when they know that they have their agencies found out. Others, our recruiter got a phone call, I believe, from an agency in the Bay Area, who they asked, hey, is it true that this person's applying with your agency? Because if so, we're not going to continue with their field training. I mean, there are real consequences to our attempt to recruit for this. And this is why we're asking for it. We were talking about this during the fire drill. This is not going to unilaterally address the staffing challenges that the department has, right? There isn't any one at one tactic or strategy that's going to do that. It's really a multitude of strategies that we're going to employ. I took over this position about 2 months ago. I believe I'll be attending a lot more of these meetings as we, to your points, address a lot of things that we can through the civil service process to streamline and optimize our hiring practices and our job. You know, like Ms. Biaspa said, we talked about the applicant path that didn't exist. President Favetti, I did not know that you spearheaded the lateral recruitment drive in San Francisco.
I didn't do a spearhead. I made sure I worked with Julie Gonzalez mm-hmm. and Terry Brady, who were the in charge of the centralized units.
The examiner,
And we were working on making sure that we could have how we could have the laterals. And so changed rules and made sure that there was a procedure in place to have the laterals and capture that.
Right. So, like we spoke about, the third applicant pathway is something the department has never engaged in. So we're going to be able to have folks come in who've been trained in other academies or who didn't work the requisite 12 months in another agency. Right now, they'd have to go through the whole academy. So we are doing a top to bottom review of how we attract candidates, their hiring pipeline, optimization of all those processes. This is just one of those aspects. I'm happy to, you know, if the commission would like to report back after like 90 days or 6 months after we've implemented this with the commission's blessing to do that as well. As far as data, it's kind of hard to have a metric on just because somebody, our background investigators are not tracking when an agency found out what's in the officer candidate's background from their other agency on, okay, they have something that we are no longer going to consider them a viable candidate. What is the date of when that was put into their personnel file? Our investigators are trying to conduct comprehensive background investigations, but they're not dealing with one case at a time. They all manage a caseload. So we do not have the data on when was there a disincentive for that person, if it was punitive or not, relative to when their background was done. But we do have a fair number of anecdotal instances. And given our recruitment goals, you know, losing one or two qualified applicants who could be a benefit and add value to the public safety mission in the city is one or two too many as far as the department's concerned.
But you're saying that it was the recruitment end of it had indicated that anecdotally that people had withdrawn. And so it would have been nice, I think, to have those kind of statistics to this. It would have given, it would have lent some, a little bit more meat to the whole thing. I can say, especially with our experience with de-identification, not wanting to have a full-fledged, full-throated rule completely approved without some guardrails.
Yeah, and forgive me.
Significant guardrails in the sense that that perhaps there's even time limitations, as we did with the position-based testing program. We put it in as a, like for a certain level at a certain time to see whether or not it actually worked. And it would have been, I think, to our benefit when it came to de-identification, that indeed we had done the same kind of thing as we did for the position-based testing. And that would be to have some kind of saying of start and end date evaluation period and whether or not that can continue. I still am very concerned about the public's right to know.
Right.
That is, I think, essential. Those are some additional comments that I would have. I mean, I can see that this maybe needs to be redeveloped a little bit more, perhaps with that kind of caveats in mind.
I want to make sure that I'm getting the terms right. Forgive me, like I said, I've worked in operational positions.
Oh, sorry, you're just in your, I'm sorry, it's a foreign language. They need translation. And if HR folks talk to accounting folks, I mean, we use the same acronyms and such, and they mean very different things. Position-based testing is.
Oh, no, forgive me, Madam President. I'm talking about de-identify. I've seen the civil service lists for other agencies, and I was shocked at how they are because everybody can see how all of our folks perform on all civil service exams that they take in the uniformed ranks, whether you're proud of how you finished or not. The de-identification, I guess, is what goes on in the other city agencies where it just tells you the number of positions based on the score they received. But that doesn't encompass what we're talking about right now, to my knowledge, unless we're using a very large umbrella term for de-identify, because anybody can make a Public Records Act request of the city, and they will get the list by name of our lateral candidates on the civil service eligibility list.
Just as some background, we had approved rules on de-identification, and then with the idea that hopefully that they would work, and they did not. And so we had to, but we have, Commissioner Wood, you had some comments?
Yeah, I'm sympathetic to this request just due to the true multi-year staffing crisis we've had in the department, the impact that has on public safety, but also the kind of mini doom loop that sets up within the department where the resulting astronomical amounts of overtime create a working environment where our police officers become very vulnerable to appeals to lateral into other departments. And it truly has become a real cutthroat operation from agency to agency out there with $75,000, $100,000 signing bonuses being offered. So my concern over this is more over, will it be effective at what it's trying to accomplish? Because if there are agencies that are consistently, systematically looking at our lists and trying to de-incentivize lateral hires, how hard would it for those agencies to just make regular public records requests and accomplish the same thing? So I'm a little concerned about how effective it would actually be. I think what I would want to see if we were to approve this would to be a report back, whatever time frame would accommodate maybe a couple of academies and see what the impact is on lateral recruitment and whether it's really worth the trade-off of that extra level of public, you know, input into being able to see the, being more accessible to the list, or if it's not generating the results we need. So I think I would definitely want to, I have questions about whether it'll actually work on its own terms, and I would like to see a report back on if that is the case or not. But I am somewhat like Vice President Minor, just kind of open to trying whatever we can do, because we truly are in a crisis, both for our citizens and for the ranks of the department.
But I would want to have that incorporated into the rule. So rather than, oh, report back, as we did with de-identification, although there was some report back in there, I would honestly want to have that this is a pilot program for 2 years, that we say we're going to try this. And then after 2 years, it's up to the commission whether or not it's going to continue. Because rather than having to do as we did with de-identification, where then we have to completely revise the rules, we need to go into a major change mode, that if it comes back to the commission as to whether or not it continues, it's just the commission action. And it makes it a lot easier. But then we also have, we would have objective criteria showing whether or not it works, and we have our control over that. So, Commissioner Leon?
I completely agree with you, President Vivetti. Listening to both sides, I think there are merits on both sides, and I'm not here to question her institutional knowledge, and I believe everything she said. I think that the thing that troubles me right now with regard to the presentation today is the lack of data to support the proposed rule change. But I think the couple of commissioners, Minor and Vivetti, have made a very good suggestion in terms of putting a pilot program for a 2 year, and I would certainly endorse and support that.
Is 2 years the right time frame to get sufficient experience to be able to evaluate?
I think we can start with the 2 years and report back. I just want to make it clear that the data we would be reporting back is really the success in recruiting laterals. I heard your comment earlier, it would be nice to have data on those people that withdrew due to disincentivizing. But when I interviewed the recruitment team about their experiences, a lot of people that withdraw is afraid of saying something in case they're obviously staying with their department and they're afraid of further retaliation, for a lack of better word. So I'm not sure if we're going to get people to say, yes, I withdrew because my agency didn't close my complaint file or whatever it is.
I would like to see some revisions to this, and that would be that this indicates if this is a pilot program. I could go for a pilot program.
Okay.
Where I know that it's going to come back to the commission with data, and it's going to be the commission that decides whether or not it continues.
Yes.
And then there's already built in so that there is not, we don't have to go through what we went through with de-identification.
Similar to EEOC rules, right, where we let it sunset or terminate.
Actually, the original, I think I believe it was the PBT or the position-based testing, I think, and I think with MTA where we had.
Oh, I don't know what you
I
did with MTA.
I can't remember.
But we had several
where it was like, we don't want to use the word sunset because that's a contract term.
Okay.
And so the rules would be subject to the rule will continue subject to the approval of the commission.
That's what we recently used for the EEOC rules.
I know. And I said the same thing. I didn't say it publicly, but I said it privately, and yes. I should have said it publicly because that is a contract term. It's not a civil service rule term. But okay. You got to change. You got to understand that. But I am still skeptical. I am very concerned about the public's right to know. So, but I do believe if it's that you have it so that you can write some amendments in here, work with Sandra, I guess, and Executive Officer Ng,
and make sure that we have it so that it comes back to the commission for a subject is for approval for continuation. And that would be something I could live with. I still am concerned about the public's right to know. And I think we need to then also do something as far as the Sheriff's Department and perhaps put in an amendment that would also have to come back to the commission. Because they have the same standards in the sense that they are armed. And I would certainly want to have that for any other armed classification that we have within the miscellaneous ranks. There's the 80.
Are those two separate requests? The only reason I'm asking is because sheriffs is interwoven with miscellaneous,
right?
And so I'd have to research to see if they have a different volume or.
Oh no, they don't have a different volume. All you have to do is you have to put in a section that says, with the exception of the ranks of the, I would say, classifications subject to post and happen to, and I believe that there's another term, but for the lack of another term, carry arms and are armed, because there might be the park rangers. I can't remember if park rangers are armed or not, and they're not under the 8,000 classifications. Yeah. So, you know, you'd have to take a look at that, but that would not be something the police department would do. That would be something that the DHR could do, or the civil service staff could do.
Okay.
That would not affect the police department at all.
Okay, so yes.
So for the police, Ryan, what we have today, I would appreciate, I don't know if the other commissioners agree, I would appreciate having this come back
in a different format
with that particular caveat.
Okay, that is fine. I do want to address one other comment you made earlier. You were concerned that our rule change was very limited. You expected us.
Yes, I actually expected more.
so I just want you to know, since we've been working together on trying to expedite the hiring of Q2 officers, so we have made a lot of changes that did not require a rule change. So as an example, frequency of the exam. Civil service doesn't talk about how frequent we should give an exam, or redesigning the job ad to be more attractive. Civil service rules only just states that you need minimum qualifications in there and selection procedures. So that's why, I mean, we have made significant changes, but that's why it's not in the package, because they didn't require rule changes.
Oh, good. Oh, okay.
So
but that would be nice to have a report though on what you've done.
Well, apparently we have to prepare one for the police commission, and so.
And Madam President, there's been a letter of inquiry from the Board of Supervisors as well. And I mean, our staff is working diligently on getting folks and complying with all the legislative body requests as well. I do want to say to your point, Commissioner Wood, about the how we would track this in the 2-year cycle. We could do that pretty simply through the PRA request process. I don't think a lot of these agencies are going to be doing these inquiries on their own time. So if we don't have any PRA requests in the 2 years, we could be reasonably certain that the accessing of these lists for disincentivization would have been put to bed by this pilot.
And probably that matched up with if there is an increase in lateral hires, right?
Yes, sir. That'd be the easiest metric, right?
Yes, that would be. Okay. So shall we hold this over?
So what a motion to continue to. We are filling up our second meeting in October. Is it too late for you to put this over for our first meeting in November, which would be November 3rd? You're trying to do it before then?
I think we could probably shoot for November. Yes. Yes. Because otherwise, if it's the next meeting, I understand it's due this Thursday, right?
It's
due. Oh, no.
You have an extra.
Yeah. October 23rd is what she's been telling people.
Or it'll be due October 23rd. We'd like to have it in November.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. If that's not such a problem.
Is that?
May I just say a word, President Favetti, Kate Howard?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm a guest, Kate Howard. Appreciate the conversation today. DHR is happy to work with PD to bring back a modified version of the rule, which would clearly define the rule as a pilot project, leaving that discretion in the hands of the commission about whether to continue it or not. Providing some additional metrics, for example, how many lateral recruits have there been each of the last 5 years? I know that number is very small because we've talked about it. So it would give us some benchmarks to look at about whether this is effective. Are we seeing the results? I would ask if it's possible to have this heard in October. It would be very helpful. This is a topic that we discuss weekly with the mayor's office. They are eager to see whether the lateral recruitment strategy will help us rebuild our ranks more quickly. And I believe we can make the amendments that you've requested within the time frame that Director Eng needs in order to get it on your agenda.
That would be October 20th.
If I can just quickly make a comment, I'm just checking with our director here. If you are shooting for the meeting, the first meeting in October.
The commission is shooting for the second meeting in October.
Okay. Okay, and what is the deadline date for? That would be October 9th.
October 9th. That should be fine.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to manage the commission's expectations on the data. It's a limited set because we don't have a lot of laterals, but like I stated earlier in the presentation, the idea would be to really kind of hone in on them as a as an avenue to kind of beef up our staffing while we try to get to a point where we are just keeping up with attrition, which is usually where we've been when we were fully staffed, you know, over 10 years ago.
No, we used to get thousands of applications.
Yeah, yes, Commissioner, and laterals really weren't really a focus, but not as much as we're pivoting to now. Yeah. They have been good, but we hadn't been seeing the issue. I think some of the disincentivization is a product of how this is a national issue that's not unique to the city. But as far as like hard data and large percentages and numbers, I can have our recruitment team compile anecdotes where we would not necessarily call out any one jurisdiction for what's going on.
Oh yeah, please do not identify other jurisdictions.
Right.
We would rather have, we prefer objective data. And if it's anecdotal, even if there's comments, you know, that's this person, and I don't know if it's so much fear as much as there's a lot of decisions that go into, there's a lot of factors that go into the decisions on whether they're going to join another department or not. But I do know very well that there is a real strong desire for many people who didn't make it the first time on the Q2 list, the entry list, to come to San Francisco as a lateral.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. So we can get that data for you together. Like I said, I do think if the commission decides to implement this in a pilot capacity, that the true data will be at the conclusion of the pilot program, which I would assume would be the purpose of doing one, which would be to figure out what our recruitment numbers are mm-hmm. under the pilot and how many PRAs we get from allied law enforcement agencies.
Do we need a motion to do that, or do you think we can just send it?
Easy enough to move.
Okay, so you should
move to continue agenda item number 18 to the commission's meeting of October 20th.
And I'll second that. Is there any public comment on the motion to continue this item to October 20th? If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press *3 now.
Commissioners, if I can just make one quick comment, there were some concerns about how background checks were conducted. I just want to let the commissioners know that at the time when we made the amendment to 210, and it's had to do with a full of everything that had been going on in the nation, I did have an opportunity to meet with the police department, and they went into detail what was involved in a background check. Did it matter if it was lateral or a new applicant from the eligible list? They went into full detail, and as the captain mentioned, they were already practicing this before SB and before we made the rule. That's how seriously it was when they conducted the background. And they explain in detail how the police departments in other cities and counties work together in California.
Thank you. You're right. They did it. The report at the public hearings was extensive. Okay, so so if you're in your podium for public comment or in the room, come to the podium. If you're on out, if you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, I'll do the roll call vote. Vice President Minor?
Aye.
Commissioner Leong?
Aye.
Commissioner Wood?
Aye.
And I'll vote aye. And we'll see you in October. Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation. Okay, shall we go to our next item?
Commissioners, I will actually have to read all the items as we begin to hear this. But if I may just bring up before we're about to make public comment on the items that are about to go into closed session, but there is one appellant who appears to be requesting a second postponement, but we inform the appellant that they must make it before the commission. I don't know if we want to check to see if the appellant is in the room or if they are on the phone, but it is up to the commission how you would like to proceed. There are also employees representing the department here for that particular item. So I just, and we're referring to item 22.
Okay, should we first find out if that person is here?
If we could please check if the appellant Shalise Otis for item 22 is present in the room or maybe joining virtually or calling in.
Shalise Otis.
If appellant Shalise Otis is on the line, can you please press star 3 so we can unmute you? I don't think she's connected.
Can you tell if she was ever connected?
Can you tell she
was? This is Elizabeth Aldana, Civil Service. She never accepted the WebEx invite, so.
But you said she's on the phone? Or there?
I don't... She's not. She has not connected.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry about that. So the question is whether or not this there's a request for postponement, but we don't have the appellant here. And the reason for the, or can we go into the reason for the request for postponement?
It is possible. So the appellant actually was scheduled for our earlier meeting. This was back in August 18th, and it was the appellant who made the first request postponement specifically asking for this meeting date. It was, and the appellant also received the staff report by email in two different ways. However, it was not until the notice of meeting was sent for this particular meeting that the appellant at the last minute had required a hard copy of the report be mailed to them. And we made efforts to communicate with the appellant, opportunity to explain the appeal process, opportunity to meet, and also explain to the appellant that any further requests for postponement will require the appellant to either come before the commission in person or to join virtually to request the postponement.
Do we have the department representative here?
The appellant did email since the meeting started.
Oh, she did?
Wanted me to share that. Let me share her email message.
Yes, please.
So she sent two email messages. What she said is the website shares only one way of making a request to reschedule. I'm not sure if this process will be fair or not. How she asked, how do we allow documents to be added to the file. She's requesting to have the matter postponed. She stated that we said we were sending the entire file, but she says we failed to send all the documents. I believe we sent the entire file. Our staff didn't know what her concern was. And then in an additional message she shared, in addition, please do not call me or request for a call to invite me to come to your office to discuss the matter of discrimination. Please read my documents. And I did email her this morning and told her that we had extended her an opportunity to request a second postponement as a courtesy, as was our procedure established, that a second postponement is not something that's guaranteed, that she had to make the request directly to the commission, and she needed to do that either in person or by phone. We also sent her her packet at her request in the mail. It was more than 300 pages, and I told her our practice is normally to charge 10 cents a page, and we sent it free of charge to her without that cost. So she's been clearly communicated to what her responsibility was as an appellant to make the request in person today, either through the WebEx on by phone or in person.
Commissioners, we have the department representative here.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Marvin Dunson III. I'm EEO program senior specialist with the Department of Human Resources, here for the appeal today for the date that the appellant specifically requested after the first request for postponement, and we're ready to proceed.
Okay, thank you.
Just to clarify, is the appellant still employed?
Yes. They are currently on a workers' comp leave of absence.
It's still on the workers' comp.
Correct. That's what.
Mm-hmm. Try to make contact with the appellant again one more time.
Seems like she specifically said don't.
Oh. Yeah, she did.
If you're on workers' comp, do you have a responsibility? Do you have a responsibility to report?
I don't know the answer to that. However, I think we need to clarify what we're discussing right now, because are we trying to move item 22 and we're having a discussion on whether or not to continue the item or
to hear it?
To hear it.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's before you right now. Sorry, I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay, commissioners, do you have a preference? Do you want to postpone it one more time or go ahead and hear the department on closed session?
Well, the reason I asked if the employee was, and thank you for restating my question correctly, which is whether the employee was still on workers' comp, is sometimes that is in fact a consideration. Just kind of based on that, I'm willing to continue this and try to reach out to the appellant one more time to get a date certain. And then after that, we need to move forward and make a decision based on the record. But that's my
Okay. So, commissioners, go ahead.
I'm open to that.
I'm agreeable to it as well.
Okay, so we wouldn't even have to go into closed session for this. We could move to continue it with the idea of getting a date certain from the appellant, and that would be the last. And we would record on the minutes. This will be the last postponement granted.
President Favetti, if I may. The workers' comp leave that I'm referencing is actually for a fifth workers' comp claim. I'm not aware of that she's ever actually mentioned her workers' comp leave being a factor for the request for postponement. She only recently, last month, I believe, after requesting the first postponement,
submitted another workers' comp injury claim that is currently pending.
I hate to interrupt you. I think we might be moving into an area where we'd have to decide to go into closed session. Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner Wood. Thank you.
So make a motion and then take public comment.
Okay. So then there's a motion to continue the item to a date certain from the appellant. Or actually, I think we need to consider the department too.
Well, that's right. It needs a date that works from.
Okay, so I believe for a date at the mutual agreement of the department and the appellant, this will be on the record as the last postponement granted. So I guess that would be the motion.
And I'll second.
Okay, do we have any public comment? If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
Commissioners, I'm wondering if maybe we want to set the date, given that this is the second postponement. We can, with the department here knowing if.
So you're requesting a friendly amendment to the motion.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'd like an answer to the question about whether, if someone is on workers' comp, if we can compel them to attend a hearing before we set a date certain. I'm not sure about that. My instinct tells me we can't, but.
If I'm happy to look into this, but if I may also suggest that perhaps that's something that the parties, both the, I don't know, if the department and to respond to that question as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then this leaves us in a point where we are to continue the item for further discussion or for further information on from our city attorney and a determination at a later date for the hearing. And then this would be the last postponement granted. So that would stay there. Okay. Do we have a second on that front?
Second.
Okay. Yeah. We don't need to rescind the prior moment. We can look at this as a friendly amendment, correct?
Yeah, you can just do amendment. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's all right. So we've got a motion and a second. And if you're any public comment, if you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, so I'll do a roll call vote. Vice President Minor?
Aye.
Commissioner Leung?
Aye.
Commissioner Wood?
Aye.
And I vote aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I will continue. Item 19, public comment on all matters pertaining to items 21, 23, 24, and 25, including public comment on whether to hold items 21, 23, 24, and 25 in closed session pursuant to California Government Code Section 54957B and San Francisco Administrative Code Section 67.10B. Item 20, vote on whether to hold items 21, 23, 24, and 25 in closed session. Item 21, appeal by Brian Dene of the Human Resources Director's determination of insufficient evidence to sustain a violation of city policies requiring reasonable accommodations. Recommendation of the Human Resources Director, adopt the report, uphold the decision of the Human Resources Director, and deny the appeal by Brian Dene. Item 23, appeal by Maria Malloy of the Human Resources Director's determination that investigative findings did not establish appellant's complaint of harassment, discrimination, and retaliation. Recommendation of the Human Resources Director, adopt the report, uphold the decision of the Human Resources Director, and deny the appeal by Maria Malloy. Item 24, request for a hearing by Emmanuel Borja on their future employment restrictions. Recommendation of the Director of Transportation, adopt the report, deny the appeal, and approve the future employability restrictions. Item 25, request for a hearing by Laron R. Anderson, former 7514 general laborer, on their conditional future employment restrictions with the San Francisco Department of Public Works. Recommendation of the Human Resources Director, adopt the report and uphold the decision of the Department of Public Works decision.
Okay, shall we have a motion, or shall we first request public comment on all matters pertaining to 2021, 22, 23, 24, including public comment on whether to hold the items in 2021, 23, since we've already made a motion on 22 and 24 in closed session pursuant to California Government Code 54957B and San Francisco Administrative Code Section 6710B. If you're in the room, please come to the podium. If you're on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay. Then I'm going to go on to item number 19 and a vote on whether to hold items 20, 21, 23, and 24 in closed session. Yeah, 24 to closed session.
25.
And 25, excuse me. Okay, sorry, in closed session. Could I have a motion?
Yes, I move that we, the commission, pursuant to government code and San Francisco Administrative Code, go into closed session to hear items 21, 23, 24, and 25.
Second.
I will do a roll call vote. Vice President Minor?
Aye.
Commissioner Leong?
Aye.
Commissioner Wood?
Aye.
And I vote aye. We'll be going into closed session. So we need to vacate the room except for those individuals who will be here for item number 20, appeal by Brian Deneve of the Human Resources Director's decision or determination of insufficient evidence.
President Favetti, the recording is now on. It is 8:04 p.m.
Thank you very much, Ms. Aldana. We are now reconvening in open session, and we need a vote to elect whether to disclose any or all discussions.
My apologies. You would have to disclose first a vote, the action that was taken on
22? No.
2023. It affects the employment status, and that would be
close 21, 23, 24.
So you would have to disclose their vote for 21, so you have to disclose your vote when it affects the employee's employment status. And then you have discretion to disclose your vote for the others that don't affect. In terms of what you have to disclose, it would be the last one because it pertains to future employment and restrictions. So that's item 24. Wouldn't have to, although you can, for item 23, you can disclose your vote. For 21, likewise, this does not affect the employees' employment status, so you have discretion, but you don't have to decide to disclose your.
Okay.
Well, it's generally our practice not to disclose discussion, but to disclose the vote.
The vote, yeah. So there'd be two. So you disclose your votes and then make a motion to whether or not you want to disclose the discussions.
Okay. All right. So. We need a vote to disclose whether we are going to disclose any or all discussions on items number 21, 22, 23, 24, and 25.
Okay, 22, were we on, was that recorded when we continued 22?
We don't
have to do anything with
that. Oh, that was already recorded, that's right. Okay.
24, where we're on the record.
We were on the record. Mm-hmm.
Did all, yeah.
But it was not the public record. It was a closed session record. So I'm just.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Okay, so let us have a motion with regard to the disclosure of any or all discussions.
I move that we do not disclose the discussions that occurred in closed session with respect to agenda items 21, 23, 24, and 25. And I usually do it as one motion, but that we disclose the vote.
Right, exactly.
For each of those items.
Okay. And we have, there's been a motion and a second. If there's anyone in the room who wishes to provide public comment, please come to the podium, Mr. Sherburne. If there's anybody on the phone, please press star 3 now.
President Favetti, no public comment at this time.
Okay, I'll do the roll call vote. Vice President Minor.
Aye.
Commissioner Wood.
Aye.
Oh, excuse me, Commissioner Leung.
Aye.
And I vote aye. The vote is unanimous, 4-0. We will not be disclosing any of the discussions. However, the commission voted in closed session on the appeal by Brian Deneuve, 4-0, to uphold the decision of the Human Resources Director and deny the appeal. On item number 23, the appeal by Maria Malloy, the commission voted on a vote of 4-1 with Commissioner Wood dissenting to adopt the report.
3-1.
Oh, excuse me, 3-1. Oh, yeah, that's right, 3-1. It's wishful thinking that we have five commissioners here. Adopt the report, uphold the decision of the Human Resources Director, and deny the appeal of Maria Malloy. And on item number 24, a request for hearing by Emmanuel Borja on their future employment restrictions, the commission voted a vote of 3-0. Commissioner Leung happened to have been out of the room for a moment to hold the matter over to the meeting of October 7th, 2025. And on item number 25, the request for a hearing by Lerone R. Anderson, the commission voted 4-0 to adopt the report and uphold the decision of Public Works, but to have the decision effective the date of release. Okay, so now we're on item 27. Thank you so much. Item 27.
Item 27, commissioners' announcements or requests.
Okay, and I believe that we had we had public comment on item number 14, and we would like to have that again followed up at another meeting, and specifically perhaps to address the last union, the results of the last meeting with the employee organization. And I believe that's on January 9th or no, excuse me. Just to have another follow-up at a meeting. You see, when are we thinking about doing that?
Yeah.
Maybe in November. It was Jesse
Stanton.
Yeah. Who had requested that there be some follow-up on that, and so we can do that in November, maybe the first meeting. But I'll leave that to you.
Specifically, he was referencing in the email, the department said, just to be clear, it does not intend to transition this work city employees. And he wanted further discussion of that.
Thank you so very much. Okay, and then we've got our final item on the agenda. Oh, do we have any other requests? Announcements.
Do we have an update on replacement for Commissioner Salverson?
Not at this time.
All right. So there we go. And so with my gavel, can I go ahead and do it?
Yeah.
It's 8:12, 8:13, 8:14. What time is it anyway?
8:12.
Adjourned.
Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Oh, yes, Elizabeth, please. Thank you so much.
Our super host.
You're welcome.
And all your